Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again to Circles of Change, and now for something completely different. As we say on our show, we love the diversity. I'd like to welcome Dr. Vanya Moreno, who moved to Tucson in 1993 to pursue a PhD. Welcome to the studio, Vanya.
Hi, how are you?
I'm terrific, thank you. Let me give that introduction. Her doctorate studies, by the way, were in ecology and evolutionary biology, with a focus on animal behavior, and specifically in animal learning and communication, where she researched African gray parrots and song choice in juvenile zebra finches. I find this fascinating. Vanya received her bachelor's, though, prior to biological sciences from the University of California, Santa Barbara, interning at the Santa Barbara Zoological Gardens, and then volunteering to rehabilitate abandoned or injured baby seals and harbor seals, sea lions and harbor seals. And her undergraduate thesis is on brown-headed cowbird flight whistle dialects. So we're all over the map here when it comes to animals, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes. Simple answer, yes. Well, Vanya shifted then to the field of behavior and training for pet dogs and cats in 1997, which I'm sure we're going to talk about then, transition. And in 2006 was even certified as an expert witness in dog behavior for the Arizona Superior Court. Her company is called Animal Magnetism, based on a longtime interest to help people to better communicate with their pet companions, and in doing so to help them to strengthen those relationships, specifically, again, dogs and cats. In addition to working with pet owners primarily at their homes, she also specializes in continued behavioral education for veterinarians and their staff members. She also gives frequent educational seminars around the Tucson area. And Vanya also provides humane rattlesnake avoidance training and Colorado river toad avoidance classes at clients' homes for their pets. And that would be my opening question. Can you come and help me with those things?
It happens more than you'd think.
Yeah.
Yes, because people are so fearful of rattlesnakes. If someone is kind of paralyzed with their fear, I can do all of the training. I can set up the snake and then take the leash from the owner in the house and bring them out and do all of the training.
Meaning the leash off of the owner to
do
that.
Yeah, yes.
And the dog or cat.
But more often than not, it really helps the owner to work through their fear, because they get to see the snake and see me interact with the snake and work with the snake. And then I explain away a lot of the mythology that goes along with rattlesnakes. They can only strike 2/3 their body length. They don't get airborne, but people seem to think they do. And my snakes I've had for 7 years. I've been working with them for 7 years. Two of them are pretty good size, about 4 feet. And I've never really seen them strike further than a foot.
So I'm taking your word for it, okay? There we go. I am definitely a snake sissy, although lizards I can do. My son has two of them. Well, you know, in that introduction, of course, I mentioned that, you know, there's birds in your background and,
yes,
and singing and voices and dialect,
yes,
and as well as, you know, the sea animals, sea lions, harbor seals. 97, you shifted to dogs and cats.
Yes.
What's the story behind all this?
Well, my whole life, I really wanted to work with animals, and I wanted to talk to animals, and I wanted to figure out how we could do that in a reasonable way. So I was very attracted to animal-human communication as a high schooler and undergraduate. And my advisor at UC Santa Barbara really tried to talk me out of it, because it's such a small, small field, and it was a very somewhat dysfunctional field back in the day, and it's changed now. But he said, you know, if you want to study animal communication, how about birdsong? And so I started working with a graduate student on cowbird songs. And cowbirds are really kind of cool, because they're bird parasites. They lay their eggs in other birds' nests. They don't raise their babies. So you really get to get into the genetics of the song, mm-hmm, because they don't hear the song.
Interesting.
It's fascinating. So that was really cool work, especially, I think, to do as an undergraduate. But I'd always been interested in dolphins and whales and such. And to that end, I worked with Dr. Alice Aldridge, who had nothing to do with whales or dolphins, but she did study stuff in the ocean. So I
close got, enough.
Yes, yes. And then once I was done with my undergraduate career, I was still really attracted to the animal human communication thing. And this is this is before the internet was really big. I feel really old. My fiance had family in Tucson, and I thought, well, I'll just check out Tucson, University of Arizona. And lo and behold, there was Irene Pepperberg with Alex the African Gray Parrot doing animal human communication.
So we're getting closer.
We're getting closer. So that's why I came to Arizona. And I ended up studying song choice in juvenile zebra finches, given an aviary full of choices.
Right, here in Tucson.
Which turned out to be a fabulous study. What I found was that I had an aviary full of 12 breeding pairs of zebra finches, and the only experimental control was I switched the babies, some of them. If they were the right age, I'd switch them. So we had some cross-fostering going on. So once the babies had fledged and started to sing, I recorded their songs and compared them back to the adults to see who they had copied. And what I found was that the babies that had not been raised by their genetic father would go out and find their genetic father's song to copy.
Yeah.
So, really fascinating study.
So that kind of training, that scientific research, the data collection and so on, your observation skills, ethnography is what we would call it, right, mm-hmm. in the social science standpoint. The transposition of that know-how then with dogs and cats, was this one of someone saying, Vanya, could you help me with my dog? I'm having trouble here. Or how did you get into this
field
then?
Not even a little bit. I was a cat person. I'd never had a dog in my life. My only experience with a dog really was when coming through our cat door and eating the cold cuts off the table at a family gathering. But a friend of mine got a dog, and I was listening to him talk to his new trainer, and I thought, well, what do you know? Animal-human communication. And I'd always been attracted to helping people, helping animals.
Right. There's the common thread.
Yeah. So I wasn't thrilled with my graduate career. It was very stressful. And I did not realize that I suffered from anxiety. I tried to control it with yoga and meditation for years. And I was a math phobe. And I had a very statistically heavy dissertation. So because we did no experimental control, we had a lot of statistical control.
Oh, indeed. That's right.
And so when, I'd gotten some not fabulous instructions on how to write up my dissertation, and I wrote it up, and I was scared to death. And I went in, and my committee basically said, we want you to rewrite this.
So it's amazing how adversity can drive us into new places.
Oh, goodness. Well, not only that, but they said, and we want you to mathematically model it. And that's when I just went, oh, I'm done.
So the shift into animals, and so the working now with dogs, of course, one of your passions, I know, because my daughter, Jordan, who just got a brand new puppy, 13
yes.
weeks old, a silver Labrador retriever,
yes.
I guess, is looking forward to starting class with you. Why are puppy socialization or puppy obedience classes so important?
Puppy socialization is so important for the same reason that human socialization is so important. We have a developmental window that is only open for a very short time
right.
relative to the rest of our lives. And for puppies, it starts around 3 weeks of age when all of their senses start to work. And that window really closes fairly rapidly around 5.5, 6 months of age when they get their big dog teeth. I mean, it doesn't slam shut. You still have some plasticity, but not like you did before. And that's when they're learning the vital skills, if you will, of learning how to use their mouth properly. So we don't break the skin if we bite. Also, people, places, things, other dogs are safe.
Mm-hmm.
The dog brings into this world their personality, and the environment starts to act on that personality right away. And if that puppy isn't socialized to a lot of other people, dogs, places, then they could be fearful, and that fear could easily turn into an insecurity-based aggression, which is most of what I see when it comes to aggression.
And that's the other kind of coaching, of course, is you help people with dogs that have problems on the other end of that spectrum, which is how do I go back in and help rewire them to get that regression out of the equation.
Yes.
So I imagine for you as a trainer and a coach to be able to do the work early so that you kind of work yourself out of a job over time would be really, really fulfilling work.
Absolutely. So I do work with people that have dogs that are way past that plasticity, especially people that get rescue dogs.
Because we don't know what we're going to get.
You don't know what you're going to get. You can pretty much bank on the fact that you're going to get some baggage, but that doesn't mean that that dog is done. There are amazing dogs that have come out of rescue, and that just speaks to the resilience of that dog.
Well, also their gratefulness and compassion of being adopted. We've had 9 different rescue dogs.
Oh, yes.
And everything from age 18 months for a black lab that had been kept in a crate 20 hours a day.
Yes.
How tragic was that? All the way to a golden that was 14.
Yes.
That we adopted he was with us until 16 and a half.
Oh, that's
and
wonderful.
They always bring, you know, some fun quirks to work with. But the puppy thing, I'll have to admit, this is new for me. And you're right about the adult teeth. I can't wait till they come. Because right now, you know, wearing blue jeans around Tucson when it's 112 is not fun. But that little ankle biter, and I'm putting bug spray and all sorts of other things thinking
so
it might work.
That's
not happening.
And the thing is that it's a trade-off.
Yeah.
You get a rescue, you get baggage, you get a puppy, you get a puppy. With all of the things that go along with teaching a baby how to be.
So my question, of course, too, in amongst talking about, of course, obviously demonstrating your skills and working with the furry pets, but how much of your work really is about getting inside the head of the owner and helping the owner with really their issues, not necessarily the animal's issues?
A lot of it, yeah. It really helps me, the fact that I did deal with anxiety and
on a personal level
and had to come through it, has really helped me understand when a dog is having a panic attack, separation anxiety, thunderstorm anxiety, these sorts of things, or when a person is having so much anxiety that they can't see straight.
Or they're actually probably trajecting it onto the animal who's picking it up from them.
Absolutely. It's a catch-22. So I can't just go in and do what's best for the dog sometimes. A lot of the time, actually. I have to work with the family. And that makes it more like counseling, which I really enjoy. It's fascinating and so rewarding to be able to really help somebody with their own anxiety and help them to help their dog.
How much of those anxieties then for us human types really perhaps were as a result of having a bad experience with a dog somewhere in our background? Or can people even articulate why?
Sometimes.
As you garden. Yeah.
Sometimes. I mean, single trial learning is how I teach dogs to stay away from rattlesnakes. It really only takes one bad experience to set itself up in your brain as, oh my gosh, that doesn't mean that if you have one bad experience that that it will set itself up. It may roll right off your back.
So in this case, you're saying you are orchestrating an event for the dog to actually have a nasty experience with a snake so that then they will not go poke their nose over in that direction.
Yes, and it's the easiest training I do.
And so what does that one of those sessions look like?
What I do is first I leave everybody in the car. I bring a traveling circus. I leave them in the car. I do use an electronic collar. I think it's the absolutely best way to teach them to stay away from rattlesnakes. There are some trainers that say that it's too harsh to use an electronic collar, but I use it on the lowest possible shock level. And one of the first things I do is say to the owner, would you like to feel what it feels like? Because I want you to understand what the dog is going through.
Yeah.
It is actually easier for me to teach a dog to stay away from rattlesnakes than it is for me to teach them to stay away from toads, because toads look like toys.
They do, yeah.
Yeah, rattlesnakes stare back. Yeah, the dog knows this isn't necessarily fun. So it's more of a startle response that I get with the electronic collar with the snake. Whereas with the toad, I have to turn up the shock collar. So what I do is I go in and I just talk to the people and I ask them lots of questions. Are you afraid of rattlesnakes? What experiences your dog had with rattlesnakes in the past? Let's take a look at the backyard. And I explain to them exactly how we're going to do it. I'm going to set out the loud rattlesnake first, and I'm going to lay a scent trail with a cloth that one of the snakes sits on in their cage. You don't want to get any closer than 4 feet to the rattlesnake, which is plenty of distance, and you and the dog stay at least 4 feet away. So the dog comes up, sniffs the cloth, and then we walk him towards the rattlesnake. I'll say when to stop. When the dog is looking at the rattlesnake, I'll give him a shock on level one. If the dog doesn't respond, I turn it up to level two, and so on, until the dog goes, I don't want to be near this thing.
And the opportunity to do this type of work with animals, Vanya, is this because you got requested to it by clients, or you had seen so many difficult situations with dogs being struck and you felt this is something I wanted to get trained in?
Actually, my ex-husband, who is also a behaviorist, is the one that developed this for us. He became the behaviorist at the Humane Society, and he thought this is a wonderful service that we need to provide, and we can earn a lot of money for the Humane Society.
Yeah.
So that's what he did. He acquired the snakes. He had the surgery done on the snakes. My snakes have had their venom glands and ducts surgically removed. I don't break their fangs off. That would be stressful for them and me. You know? And eventually it does break down the snake's mandible,
mm-hmm.
so it kills them. So I don't want to do that. I've had my snakes, two of them, for 7 or 8 years.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, they're very healthy and happy.
That's right.
Yeah.
The whole field, you started out by saying, you know, this is relatively new, anti-behavioralists, when you got involved in it, and that perhaps people might raise an eyebrow of the Dr. Doolittle-ism of it all, but that this really has changed over time. Is that because of, again, more people doing research in the area, more practitioners out there? I could see certainly more and more people understanding the horse-man connection.
Yes.
Because we also have a horse.
Yes.
But that can help in that field as well.
Absolutely. I think people like Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer on TV, mm-hmm. have actually helped because he encourages people to see the dog as a dog. I'm not a huge fan of his techniques because he does use a lot of force, and he doesn't say that he's using force, so that when people try these techniques at home, fallout can happen.
Yeah.
And I want everyone to be completely aware of what's going on before they do anything, what all of the possibilities are. I primarily use food, use positive reinforcement. I'm not opposed to using force, but I think that you earn the right to use it, and then you use it in a very thoughtful way. And more often than not, I'm using negative reinforcement, which is different than positive punishment. So negative reinforcement is taking away something the
yes,
dog
exactly.
wants, like a timeout, as opposed to the application of something unpleasant, which is positive punishment, like yelling no or jerking the collar. So I do struggle, though, with people that have the Walt Disney model of animal behavior working. Dogs don't make the intellectual leaps most of the time that we think they could.
Mm-hmm.
And when you treat a dog as though they understand what the problem is and they don't, then you actually create more problems. For example, if a dog goes to the bathroom on your rug and you yell no, then that dog might think, don't go to the bathroom in front of mom.
Ah, yes.
Yes. So, hence the problem.
Hence the problem.
Yes.
Well, I love the tagline on your business card says, how man's best friend gets that way.
Thank you.
And I think that again, this is all coming back to your knowledge as a scientist.
Yeah.
And a researcher that you can bring forward in that conversation. Vanya, so do you still work with birds at all, or is it just purely cats and dogs at this point?
It's primarily cats and dogs. I'll throw out some stuff here and there for somebody that calls me about a bird.
That's right. That's
yes.
great. Well, why don't you share with our listeners how they can get a hold of you if they've got an interest in engaging your services?
You can reach me on the internet at animalmagnetism.biz. That's for business, B-I-Z. Or my phone number is 520-440-5040. And I also teach at Dr. Randy Aronson's clinic at PAWS.
Veterinary Center, of course, who precedes me always on the show.
Yes.
Well, it's been a real pleasure to get to know you. I'm certain my daughter and our new silver lab tank are going to have fun with the, what, 7 other classmates? Is that it?
Hopefully it'll be a little fewer than that.
That's a handful of community. So this has been a real pleasure, Vanya, to get to know you and your work, Animal Magnetism, here in Tucson, Arizona. Congratulations, and keep exploring the possibilities, right?
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.